You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
It's the end of an era. We're mourning the death of our favorite riding goods catalog. But there's good news, too. New research on EHV1 detection could help minimize horse show outbreaks. We're also talking about how to maximize your rides in the hot, hot summer and discussing solutions to our sport's ever-evolving affordability crisis. Thanks for tuning in.
From Heels Down Mag, a podcast where horse pros chat about what's happening in the horse world over drinks.
Welcome to Happy Hour.
I'm Justine Griffin.
I'm Jessica Payne.
And I'm Ellie Woznicka. Welcome to episode 148 of Heels Down Happy Hour.
What up, what up?
Hey, guys.
Hello, hello.
It's May.
I'm crazy. Sweating.
Yeah.
Everybody's sweating.
We all be sweating. It's brutal. It's too early. It's too early for this. I'm like dying inside thinking about it.
I was laughing when, Justine, you posted in the group on Facebook about how many pairs of underwear people pack. Because I'm like, I'm already, and it's May, having to change my underwear like 3 times a day because of how hot it is. I can't even walk out and give the horses a flake of hay without the swamp butt attack.
I hear ya. It's just way too early for this. I'm dying inside thinking about August seems so far away, and how are we going to survive until then? But Jess, you said you're getting a cold front, huh?
I'm thinking, I mean, we're supposed to get rain, so we're pretty hot. We're like everybody. We're in the 90s. I think Doug even said his parents were in the 90s up in Jersey. So I think everybody's pretty hot. Yeah. But I think we're getting some rain come the end of the weekend, weekend, and should, you know, drop us off into the 70s and 80s. But at this point, I think we'll all take anything for a bit of a hit. And we need some rain, so I will take it.
We definitely need rain. We've got, like, wildfires, like, crazy going on. All my friends in Ocala, they've been freaking. It's, like, hundreds of acres of wildfires.
Oh, wow.
Because we're in the worst drought in, like, more than a decade, Florida, right now. So we need the rain. Like, where is the summer rain? It can't be this hot without the rain. It's crazy. This episode is brought to you by Farnam. Speaking of needing something for the hot temps, I've got a really delicious, refreshing, cold cocktail for you all this month.
I'm so ready.
So I was still hoping for like a spring drink, right? May, it's still spring, but this kind of like is more summery, I guess, given the temps lately. But I got it's a limoncello cocktail. So I'm one of the unhinged people who likes the limoncello LaCroix. My husband thinks it's disgusting that I drink the limoncellos.
Yeah, I can't do that, but
I'll
do it with you, Justine.
I was gonna say
that's right up Ellie's alley.
So so this is a limoncello cocktail, but it's more lemonade, so just you know, you can go however crazy you want on the limoncello. But okay, so what you're gonna need is a cup of lemonade, whatever your favorite brand of lemonade is. Then you're going to want a 3/4 cup club soda, a 1/2 cup of limoncello, a shot of vodka, maybe a little bit more than a shot, just saying, some fresh lemon juice, and some muddled mint. And basically, you're just going to combine all the things, all the liquids, your lemonade, your club soda, your limoncello, your vodka. Then you're going to squeeze the fresh lemon juice and mix it with the muddled mint and ice, and then pour and serve. Very easy. But it's delicious. It's really good. I had it at a derby party recently, my Kentucky Derby party.
I'm all for this.
Yeah.
Funny enough, the only flavored LaCroix, I'm going to side note because LaCroix, they're my favorite, is the grapefruit, like the palm one or whatever.
Yeah,
the grapefruit.
Yeah.
That's the only one I can do. If not, I have to just do the pure.
Really? You can't do any flavor?
Anything. No, I get that. That's the one flavor that doesn't like overpower it for me. But I think I buy cases. I'm honestly drinking one right now because it's so hot, of the pure LaCroix.
Yeah. Alex, my husband, he's a pure boy. I call him pure boy.
I'm going to shout out. They were on sale right now at Whole Foods. So I went and picked up 2 12-packs.
Man, I like just the normal. Like I could do lemon, orange, raspberry, all of them.
Oh,
but
yeah, no.
When they get like the limoncello is the only one that I'm like, this is different, and I don't know why I like it, but I like it.
And you love it. Okay. Yeah.
So this is a good cocktail. It would be perfect for tonight, but we're all
You could do your LaCroix for the club soda in the that'd actually be a good like kind of flavor and just put it with some vodka.
Exactly. You might not even need the actual limoncello. That's a good idea.
I was going to say, this is exactly, you got lemonade, soda, and limoncello. I'm thinking that's exactly what's probably in your LaCroix.
Exactly. No, there you go. So we'll share this recipe as always in the show notes, but it's a good one.
Yeah.
So Ellie, what do you got for news?
I have sad news, I think.
Oh, no.
I think some sad, some frustration. But, I mean, I'm sure people have started to see it happening on social media. But Dover is closed almost all of its locations. And, you know, all except for, I think, like, three chain stores in Texas, like Dallas, Houston, and Austin haven't posted, like, the you know, store closure social media posts that the other stores have. But like the one that we had that I used to go to in Connecticut is closing. The one in Wesley, Massachusetts, which is like, you know, the OG one, is closing. They're all going down.
I was so shocked to hear that OG one closing.
Yeah. So it's definitely an interesting situation, and they're having a store-wide sale, and there's been conversation that they're, you know, a lot of the small business owners are not going to get paid because they, you know, are going into liquidation. So, yeah, not a good time for small businesses in the equine industry, but then also not a good time for us equestrians, because, like, I love the Dover catalog. I can't afford half the crap in it, but I still like looking through it. And so that's sad.
For sure, end of an era. Like, I grew up, like, that was, like, how I plotted what I needed for Christmas, right? Like, highlighting and marking things for my parents out of the Dover catalog. This is a huge loss. I mean, things change over time, right? But, like, I'm sure the rise of other online retailers in this space made it hard for Dover, but the second it stopped being a small business itself and kind of had investors and grew too big, you know, that's
right.
You kind of see this happen, especially with private equity these days. They kind of, they get in, get out, and kind of squeeze it dry. I'll be curious, like, what their online plan is. Is this only affecting, like, all the, like, physical brick and mortar stores?
As of right now, it's just saying brick and mortar, but if you look on their website, they're doing a 10% off, like, site wide
everything.
So I guess we'll see. Yeah, because I wondered,
because the one in Raleigh's closing. Yeah,
but then I saw also this year, like not that long ago, they announced that they're opening a flagship store at WEC in Ocala.
Oh.
Like, is that still happening? But, like, remember they did that at Tryon, Jess? Remember they did, and then they closed it. So,
and then they closed it really quickly.
So I almost...
Well, and they closed more last year as well.
Yeah.
Like, when they were sold to the new private equity or whatever.
Yeah.
Last year they closed some stores, so...
So it ain't no good, basically. There's no good news coming out of that. But yeah, I mean, I've seen posts all this week from small business owners where, can you imagine, like, being a small business and Dover contacting you and being like, we want your product on our shelves. Like, that's huge.
And you're thinking that's, like, legit. Yeah.
That's huge. That's like, you made it. You know, that's a big deal. Everyone knows Dover. And then for this to happen and you're fulfilling their orders and they're fire sailing your product, but meanwhile they have no intention of paying you. That's,
and they're not going to pay you. That's the saddest part.
Yeah. So think about your favorite brands, guys, and don't go to Dover right now to buy them. But, I guess it remains to be seen what comes next, but it's just a sad story all the way around. I will miss getting my catalogs. I just started looking for them, actually, like, to see if I had any. And I found a few old school ones from, like, they're not that old, but old enough. They're, like, 2018, 2017, like, the big, thick catalogs that they used to, like, print and send quarterly.
Yes.
Yeah, I still have a few. I almost feel like it's, like, a collector's item now, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. What have you got, Justine?
All right. So the University of Kentucky published some interesting research just this last week that I think is important to share, since we've talked recently, you know, this year on the podcast about EHV1 and sort of outbreaks that have been kind of popping up as they like to do, right, in the winter time, especially as that coincides with, you know, peak show season for a lot of folks. We had an outbreak in Florida at the end of last year, in a couple places in Wellington, and actually even here in Tampa. We talked about that. But then since then, there was that outbreak at Culpeper where they had a horse present with neurological symptoms and had to quarantine and yada, yada. It's no fun for anybody who gets caught up in that. Sadly, it's just a part of horses at this point. You know, it's just like us when we get the flu, it spreads. It's a contagious disease. It is what it is. But this new research that came out of the University of Kentucky's College of Agriculture, Food and Environment, they tested a new way to monitor EHV1 transmission through airborne particles. So they're calling it air sampling. So what they did is they collected air samples from various horse show grounds. They did equestrian events in Spain and the United States, but they made sure to do international events. So like FEI level events to do, you know, high level competition where there are lots of horses. And they tested each air sample for EHV1 and EHV4, which are two of the more common contagion strains of the equine herpes virus. And so then their findings were just published this month in the Equine Veterinary Journal. And basically what they found is that they can detect EHV in the air. They found EHV1 in 20 out of 28 samples that they collected in Spain, and 3 out of 3 in Florida, and 3 out of 6 in Kentucky. Wow. So that's pretty darn consistent when you're looking at like statistics. You know, that's pretty darn high. EHV4, they also found in the air samples, but the pattern was a little bit more varied. It kind of varied by the season, so like hot versus cold weather, and also by location. But it was detected in 12 out of 28 samples from Spain and 5 out of 6 in Kentucky, which is still pretty high. So what does that mean? Well, so you remember that big crazy EHV outbreak that like totally wreaked havoc in Spain? I think it was like 2021. Remember where it was like hundreds of horses were just like stuck in Spain for weeks and weeks.
Oh yeah. It was a mess.
So after that happened, there was a push to fund this very specific study. So that's why this whole study was ever even performed, which I think is pretty neat that we're actually seeing something positive come out of what happened there. And they're hopeful that this like new method of air sampling will allow people at horse show venues to test for EHV1 quicker and show results way before we're starting to see horses like showing symptoms, right? Where then you've got to like lock down a barn and get people out. Like you can know so much sooner. The problem with equine herpes virus is pretty much every single horse that's been anywhere in its life has been exposed to it, and they're going to carry it in some way, right? It doesn't mean that they're sick. It doesn't mean that they're going to pass it on, but that's what makes this a little bit more difficult to manage. But the more tools we have, you know, especially from like a steward standpoint and a venue standpoint, I think are good to help keep horses safe, keep people safe, try to figure out what's the best way forward for horse shows. So I'll be curious to see if we start hearing more about air sampling and just taking airborne tests at horse shows to make sure that everything is safe going forward, so we don't see such like a huge disruption when there are cases. But obviously that all remains to be seen. So we'll see what comes next.
Yeah, that'll be really interesting.
That'd be super interesting.
I remember it was like a big thing when the Virginia Horse Center, canceled their Lexington Spring Premier Horse Show after the Culpeper incident,
right?
Which was huge, but like I had so much respect for them because it's like with it flaring right in that area, like you know, to put the horse's welfare first, I think is important. But I think this, what you're talking about, Justine, sounds like a great way to, you know, keep welfare in mind, but also still be able to show and enjoy our ponies.
Absolutely. Because I think the normal surveillance is what, a nasal swab when they're when they have to go in and test horses that have
been.
So that's just a lot of manpower, you know what I mean, from like a state vet, a lot of like having to be extremely careful in terms of spread. You know, I remember growing up, like I remember being at Hitsocala years ago, like I was in high school and our horses got stuck there because of a EHV case. And it was crazy. Like we would have to go through this like area to get into the barn where you'd have to like douse your shoes to keep them clean. It was, you know, it's just a lot. It's a lot. It reminds me of COVID a little bit. It gives me PTSD thinking about it. But it's
right.
It's it's contagious, right? That's why they say don't share buckets, wash your hands. Well, you know what I mean. And remember, you know, we had a vet on to talk all about this on episode 143 of like good biosecurity measures for horse showing in the winter when, you know, flu like viruses are at their peak. So. I don't know. Anything that gives us more information sooner so we can make better educated decisions for the horses, I think is good. So this sounds like a great next step in terms of hopefully something that can help us in the future.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
But what do you got, Jess? Speaking of horse shows.
So horse shows and everything. I just wanted to touch, I'm sure everybody saw, but I saw this crazy statistics about the Land Rover Kentucky Defender horse show where we had two Americans win, which was amazing. Like Coleman won and he won the 5-star. Will Coleman won the 5-star and Tammy Smith won the 4-star. But what I don't know if everybody knew is that they did the first time ever double-double by they've both won the opposite. So no one's won the 4-star and the 5-star, and they both won it opposite. So we had Tammy Smith. She won the 5-star on My Bomb in 2023. And then this year she won the 4-star on Lolay 3. Whereas Coleman's statistics are kind of even crazier. So Will won the 4-star on Diabolo in 2024. He won the 4-star on Off the Record in 2025. And then Diabolo did the 5-star and won it this year in 2026. So it's crazy. You know, he had three wins. You know, he's had an amazing Kentucky the last couple of years, but also Tammy as well. So it was really cool to see the statistics. Like, you know, I feel like we're always trying to make sure we beat the Europeans and everything else. And really, really excited for those guys to bring wins on the home front and pretty impressive statistics as well.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. It's funny to think about that because I remember when Will won the 4-star, right? And then swapped. Now Tammy did, which is, it's so cool. It was just it was a really fun year at Kentucky to watch the 4-star and the 5-star.
It was so fun.
The winners couldn't have happened to better people, you know? It was
no,
great to
100%.
Watch.
And Will, both of them had beautiful rounds, rode really well. And, you know, sometimes people get lucky and you see the rail fall out and everything else. And, you know, they both had class acts the whole time and well, well-deserved wins.
Absolutely.
It's that time of year again. Flies are back and so is the need for an upgraded fly control rotation. Luckily, this episode is brought to you by Farnam, celebrating 80 years of trusted equine care and Endure Gold Killer Fly and Mosquito Control, a new fly spray for horses. Made with brand new EPA-approved ingredients never before seen in equine care, Endure Gold annihilates flies, ticks, and mosquitoes with fast knockdown and up to 14 days of fly protection you can rely on. One spray, no mercy.
Well, so Ellie, speaking of Endure Gold, this new fly spray offered by Farnam, I got some from the feed store. It's I kept seeing it everywhere, so I figured we would review it and give it a full product review, full tried and true test. Because as we've already been saying, it's hot as all get out already here in Florida, and once it's hot season here, it's humid. And it's fly season. It's summer source season. It's wet season. It's just, it's the reason why everybody leaves Florida. this time of year. It's just miserable to be here. So I have used every type of fly spray that you can think of that is for sale on Chewy or in your feed store. I've tried everything. Because the bugs here are aliens. They're superhuman. They hulk through fly sheets. They get through fly boots. No matter how often you apply fly spray, it's just brutal. It's really hard to combat the bugs here in Florida. So that's like a lot of farms do, you know, feed through fly control. But I feel like now is a good time as than ever really to try this Endure Gold product. So I bought 3 bottles and I'm giving it a try. And right now Mikey is on daytime turnout, but usually like he'll switch to nighttime when the bugs are even worse in Florida. And usually we get rain overnight through the summer. But I wanted to give it a go, especially since he's a hot guy and I have to rinse him off constantly during the day just because he's hot and he needs a shower. Just to see how well this fly spray lasts and how often you have to reapply it. But so Endure Gold, I mean, Endure is a name we all know, right, for fly spray. It's been around a long time. But the new Endure Gold is an advanced formula. It has 6 active ingredients that provides fast-acting and long-lasting insect protection. So not only does it repel a bunch of pests like flies, gnats, mosquitoes, ticks, but this new formula with these new ingredients says it kills them. So what it does is it can knock down face flies within 15 minutes of application, which seems crazy to me. But so far, that is what I'm seeing when I use it. It continues to work through the heat, sweat, and turnout conditions for up to 14 days. That's a really long time. And it can repel horn, face, and house flies for up to 12 hours, reducing the need of constantly reapplying, right? So, like, Mikey will go out in the morning. He gets spritzed by the barn staff. Usually, I'm there by midday when he's hot. And he, like, the last, since I've had Endure Gold, I have not seen him with, like, him stomping from flies or anything. Just him going, hello, I'm hot. Wow. Please rinse me off. So, I rinse him off. I rinse him off. And then he's like, thank you. And he's like ready to go roll in the dirt and be disgusting. So I let him dry a little bit and then I fly spray him again. And then he's right back to his hay and is quite happy. So yeah, so far so good. I mean, I've done a couple of trail rides, and I've sprayed them down with the Endure Gold before I go. And that is always my truest test. Like once you're in the shade, in the trees in Florida in summertime,
the deer flies,
they are all over you. Or even those little no-see-em types. Like I don't feel them, but Mikey feels them way before I do. And is tossing his head, going crazy, swatting his tail, is irritable, doesn't want to be out there. So that is the true test, really. And I've been on 2 trail rides, having sprayed them down with Endure Gold before. Not a problem. Not a problem so far. So I've got to say it works. So this new formula is using these new ingredients that I'm going to 100% mispronounce. But it's etofenprox and acetaminoprid. Sounds good, right? That can literally kill bugs once they land on your horse in as little as 15 minutes. And those ingredients are what make it long lasting. So when you could spray it down, it can last on their body for up to 14 days, which seems like really crazy when I think about it, but that's amazing. And so not only does it repel these pests, like it does, you know, it makes your horse something they don't want to land on, but it actually can kill them. So it can kill bugs that land on your horse that are bothering them. And it's broad spectrum. It not only targets flies, but also those no-see-em gnats that I'm talking about. Mosquitoes, a huge problem when we have standing water here in the summer in Florida. And ticks, that you know, obviously a huge transmitter of Lyme disease and other issues. So, you know, and like hearing about these ingredients, it makes me a little nervous, right? I'm always like, oh, chemicals. I don't know if I want to deal with, like, you know, the smell of those chemicals, but it smells great. It smells like normal fly spray. It doesn't It doesn't feel crazy. I don't see like a sheen on Mikey's coat. When I curry him, everything is normal. He's got like normal skin texture. And so it's not affecting his skin quality, which I think is really important, especially since my horse is in a good sweater. And for the price, if I know that this fly spray, I have to spray it less than, you know, 3, 4, or 5 times a day and it's going to last, I feel like it's worth the price. So I'm seeing Farnam's Endura Gold on the shelf in my local feed stores here already, but you can find it online, at Chewy and other places as well. And we've got a $4 off coupon too that we will share in the show notes. So if you guys want to try it, it's good. You can use it to buy in store only, and it expires at the end of July. But you can save $4, and I really think it's worth a try. Ellie, I feel like you need to try it because you get the crazy spring bugs too.
Yeah. I'll see if it'll handle the bots and the horse flies. That's what I have the worst time. I feel like they're resistant to all fly sprays.
Well, this is a good one to try then. Because I think
so you'll have to keep us posted.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and you can find more information about Endura Gold by going to Farnam's website, which is Farnam, farnam.com/meet-endure-gold. And again, we'll link to all of this in the show notes. All right, guys. So I had a good riding training topic that I've, for the last couple of weeks, I keep hearing like multiple friends complain about the same thing. And I thought it'd be really great to talk about in the pod. And I wanted to point this to both of you because I think in English riding horses, it's a little different. Like we put up with kick ride type horses a little bit more than I think like Western riders do. Most Western riders, I mean, at least in my very limited experience, feel a little bit more sharper to the cues. But like, what do you guys do in your day-to-day training or even with young horses to make your horse sharper and quicker off your leg? You know, we're talking about how hot it is. Mikey is definitely always a kick ride, but in the summer, it's like it's like moving mountains sometimes to make him like sharp off my leg to get forward in front of my leg and not just like constantly be battling this sluggish horse that doesn't want to go forward. You know, I don't want to overwork him, but is there a way or things that I can do in my workouts to make him quicker and sharper off my aids when I'm like, hey, I asked you once, do I really need to ask 20 times for the same thing, right? Especially in a time of year when I want my rides to be shorter because it's so hot. So
yes. Yeah, so for us, we just had a client, we were talking about this, like, you know, she just starts to kind of nag with her leg and she doesn't kind of pay attention that she is nagging with the leg. And that's the biggest thing, is recognizing you're kicking and kicking and kicking. And every time you do it, like, it makes them more and more dull on some of the horses. So for that kind of situation, and that's not obviously everybody, but we'll say, okay, look, carry a dressage whip. And I want you to focus that if you kick him more than once, you kick him once, then it goes to just a tap on the whip. So you don't just start keep nagging. And a lot of times we'll even like, you know, either depending on the rider, give a spur or take away a spur to make them kind of recognize what they are doing to actually cause them to nag, like just kind of like being dull. They're creating it, or some of them are just naturally the horse. So it's kind of recognizing what is actually happening and saying, okay, look, I'm going to use a dressage whip just to tap them. Because a lot of times a little bitty tap of the dressage whip keeps them active behind. And so if you just think tap, tap, and like, maybe it's just once, maybe it's twice, but making sure you're not the one kicking and kicking, or they're just ignoring you, that little bit of a tap. And then yes, keeping the rides when they do, you know, listen, rewarding them and making sure when you do kind of tap them or kick them that they are moving forward. They're just not kind of slowly doing it, and making sure you get that reaction.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with that. I carry a crop this time of year for that exact reason. But what about you, Ellie? Do you have any thoughts?
Do you want the more Western response?
If you feel like it's helpful, yeah. Because, like, I'm going to talk more about this later, but I'm riding this Connemara right now that was broke as a Western
horse. That I want so badly.
But he is so, you know, like, he is a kick ride horse, but like, when I say do something, he does it. And I'm like, how do I make the thoroughbred do that? You know, like, it's incredible. So yeah, I'm curious, like, from the Western side of things, how can we use that, you know?
Yeah. And I think that this is something that definitely helped me a lot with Berkeley, who is like just a kind of dull guy, right? His Clydesdale side comes out.
Sure.
And so the whole time I was riding him until I started crossing over into the Western, you know, it was very much just like adding more leg. And I had these fantastically strong legs because I was squeezing a tube of toothpaste the entire time I rode. And after I started riding Western, and when I crossed over, these things, like, Berkeley is now extremely light on the leg. Like, I never struggled to get him to go forward anymore. And I think the biggest thing is that, and it's kind of more leading towards, you know, like, more of the dressage, where your lower leg maybe is not in, like, solid contact.
Yeah.
So if you think about the, you know, Western horses, like, there should be, like, you know, it's just your legs resting basically from the knee down. It's not doing anything unless you're asking for something. Which I laugh when I think about this, because it reminds me of Matt, who grew up Huntsy, right?
Yeah.
And I had him ride Q one time, and a lot of reining horses are taught that when you apply pressure with both legs, that means basically to come round and come together and to collect. So he was like, why, when I'm squeezing both legs, does he like slow down? And I'm like, well, this is why. I was like, you're not giving him a place to go. I said, so just like with the Western horses, when I was teaching, I'd call it, you're not kicking them, you're kind of just like flapping your leg.
Yeah.
You're not ever like applying like cowboy kick pressure. You know what I mean? Like, I think they see us pick our leg off and, you know, bring it back down, but all you're doing is really creating the movement in the stirrup. I think it's Carson James that always says, like, give it life. You put more life in the saddle. And that's how we do it a lot with the Western horses. Especially the younger ones. Like, I don't like to start horses in spurs, because I don't want them to become, you know, really dull and desensitized to those.
Yeah.
That's something I do when they're, you know, farther along in their training.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just like putting that life in your stirrups, and like, it's a lot easier, right, in a Western saddle when you have a fender, you know, it's a lot more material. But I do the same kind of thing with Berkeley now. So that now, like for flat work and stuff, from the knee down, my leg is just resting there until I'm asking him to turn, to leg yield, to ask for something. And then when it comes time to like jump, right, like then when I've got like my shorter stirrups and my contact is there all the time, it's made him so much sharper for those things as well.
Interesting. Yeah. I feel like a lot of what you're describing definitely translates to dressage too. Like my dressage trainer calls the lower leg, you want it to lay there like a damp towel. That's it.
Yes.
It's just like laying over them. You're not constantly applying your leg, because otherwise you're going to be that rider that's like pumping with their whole body eventually, right? Like
exactly.
Go. And you don't want to create an animal that needs that to go forward. So that's what I constantly am reminding myself of, like, because I'm the type, I'm very long hip to ankle. So when I like, when Mikey's like really sluggish, I feel like it makes me contract my legs. Like I'm folding up tight because I'm like trying to get him to go. And I have to be like, no, damp tile, get long in my leg. And then she's worked with me over the years with Mikey, like where we've trained him that when he feels me like at the knee, pull my lower leg off, and I'm gonna slap him like a pony club kick, that he's got to get his butt in motion because it's time to go. So it's funny, he feels me now, like where I pull that lower leg off and I'm gonna slap kick him like he's got to go forward. So I feel like it's stuff we don't think about, you know, and then especially coming from the hunter jumpers, I think we're taught to like, you're constantly squeezing all the time, which we're creating this endless problem, right? If your horse is used to feeling you pumping always giving that lower leg pressure, right? So it's like less is more almost in that way, right? Would you agree, Jess?
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. Yeah. Are there any exercises you guys like that you do at home to try to make your horse sharper to be like quicker off the leg?
Transitions.
Yes, that's exactly. I was going to say up and down transitions.
Okay.
All the transitions.
I like that. One that I do from my dressage trainer is it's a box. It's like literally 90 degree turns. And you start at the walk to halt. So you'll like walk in a straight line for, I don't know, 5-6 strides. And then you're going to turn on the haunches to the left and halt. And then walk, turn on the haunches, keep doing like the same turn. And then eventually after you do the halt, okay, then you're going to walk, turn on the haunches, trot, walk. Do the turn of the haunches at the walk, trot off, walk. And then eventually you're doing the turn of the haunches at the trot, keep the horse upright, but still going forward out of the turn. I do that in my warm up with Mikey almost every day. It just gets him upright and under me and paying attention to the aids because you start with a halt, then you kind of pick up the pace. I really like it for a horse that can be a little dull.
Yeah,
I think those kind of things are great, especially when you're pushing them to. You know, that's a good way to like differentiate. Look, my leg is on you and I'm asking you for a turn on the haunches, as opposed to look, my leg is on you and I want you to move forward. Cause I think that's kind of where and to be fair, I mean, if someone was sitting on my back and just squeezing me, it's like, if you're not differentiating, you know, like one leg means this and two legs. Cause I think it's so easy for us to be sitting up there and be squeezing with both legs when we're meaning to squeeze more with one than the other, you know?
Sure.
So exercises like that are great to like kind of get you guys both back on the same, you know, page. I feel like I'm really easy to do that with Q because Q, I swear, even when I first started him, he's never given a crap about anything. Like, so I think, like for me, I was like, I've never dealt with such a dull horse. Like, but he's just, that's who he is. Like in general, you know, like,
not going just, anywhere like, fast.
Yeah.
No, like literally when I was driving him and he outgrew his cart, it was hitting him in the back of the legs. And he like, we were going down a hill and he didn't care. Like, he's just like, okay, you know? So I think it's just kind of his personality. So it was like a different kind of thing because, you know, he's one where like, people had tried to like people like, oh, you know, get after him. I'm like, you can, he's not gonna do anything. Like, you know, it's not so much like he doesn't mind the pressure. So coming up with new ways for him was like a big thing of like, you know, creating those cues of like, because he responds so much better to that just little touch. Mm-hmm. And like now he's almost all voice command. But it's just like, you know, but if you, and now he's like to the point where he likes that like light pressure. So if you add too much pressure, instead of, you know, a more soft horse that might just like react by overexerting, he reacts by underexerting. So he's like, you didn't just give me a soft tap to canter, so I think I'm gonna walk. Like he just won't. He's one of those, like almost like, I'm like, you're not even 10 yet. And he acts like a, you know, old school horse sometimes. He's like,
I'm not gonna
do it the right way.
That's funny.
So yeah, so things like that, like those squares are great for, I think they help me get back in balance with him, kind of giving us a little pattern together helps us get on the same page, I think, mentally and physically.
For sure. And for me, like riding those going each way, the reward for Mikey is just going straight and going forward, right? Because it's harder for him to have to do to focus on moving the outside shoulder over. So then he, like the reward is going forward into a straight couple of strides. So I find like, I feel like he fills it up underneath me, you know what I mean? Because he wants to go forward out of that. So I feel like this is taboo. Like we're taught to like, you walk, then you trot, then you canter. But some days like, I will walk and then like hustle him in a medium walk for 10, 15 minutes. And then I'll just canter because then I get a better, more forward trot after if I just send him into the canter. But some people are like, oh, you know, it's like I'm blowing their minds that I'm cantering before I trotted, you know. But I mean, what do you guys think of that? I like it. My horse is slow, you know, so I can sit down and send him forward at the canter. And I let him be long in the beginning, but I really think I get a better trot if some days if I just send them forward.
Sometimes they just need to go forward. Yeah. So if that beans the canner, you got to go forward in the canner.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think as long as you're walking them enough, I mean, I'm a beep bopper. So like, I'll usually just, if they're going to be real lazy, I'll just play with the lazy and not like make them think it's my idea. You know what I mean? For like 5 minutes, 10 minutes before I ask them to canter. But like after I have them canter, I expect to have like more oomph to my trot, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So if you guys have your own tricks, your own tips for something like this, if you got a horse that could be a little dull, especially this time of year when it's hot, feel free to share them in the Facebook group. We'd love to keep this conversation going.
No slipping, no sliding, no problem. EcoGold secure saddle pads are engineered to keep the horse's back comfortable while keeping the saddle in place for a safe, competitive ride. They have impact protection through the seat, and the ultra-thin flaps provide the rider with better communication and a more stable riding position. Available in both English and Western styles, shop the entire collection at ecogold.ca.
All right. So guys, I'm getting on my soapbox because there's a lot of things happening on the internet. A lot of weird horse girl conversations that some I think are productive and important, and some are like, man, I hate the internet sometimes. But anyways.
I can't even keep it straight. I'm just going to be honest. So,
well, and everybody, it's
a lot.
It's so fractured. Everybody wants so much of your time, and they want to blow your mind. And I really think people need to be more like in our own selves, be more critical about what we read and like intentional of like, why somebody's posting this to get a rise out of me, and why I should think really hard. Why are they trying to get this emotional reaction from me? And I'm not just saying this as a journalist, but also really because I'm a journalist in a lot of ways. But affordability, all right, quote unquote affordability in our sport right now is like a hot topic, and you could see it on probably 700 different Instagram pages of people taking their own piece of this conversation and trying to make you like and comment so that they get the engagement. But it's an expensive time. It is, right? Like, it's just, it's never been cheap to have horses. It's probably the most expensive time ever to have them. We've all seen the Noelle Floyd Substack and Instagram posts about it. I feel like Piper Clement, the Plaid Horse Mag, has for a long time, in the short term, been really coming after USEF for fees, conversations, the cost of major shows. I know the Plaid Horse years ago did this like amazing breakdown of what it costs to like go to Pony Finals, and it's like more than you could ever imagine. It's crazy. And I think there's a lot of us that are just over that, that we're done with it. And organizations like the UDJC, you know, we had David on the podcast last year on episode 142 to talk about the UDJC, are born out of this interest and sort of need for an affordable option for people who want to have horses, but maybe can't afford the USEF rated circuits or don't really want to be at that level. But we're still seeing Wellington and scenes from Wellington and Vanity Fair and Hermes and all these like luxury brands cashing in on like the quote unquote horse girl lifestyle. But like, what does that mean for the rest of us normal people who like live every day with horses in our backyards, or whose business is to produce horses who do this for sport and also as a hobby. And for people who just like have always had horses and love them, but aren't trying to go to the Olympics. Like, I don't know, you know, with where we are in the world right now, the cost of fuel, the cost of hay, things are expensive. I'm paying more in board than I ever have ever in my life. And I don't think I'm like getting a much grander experience. I just think like the cost of care and people's time and labor is really expensive right now. I mean, both of you run equestrian businesses. Horses are your businesses. So I mean, what are you guys seeing? Do you feel like clients, like amateur clients, are taking less lessons? Are they backing off from showing? Let's start there. Like, what do you guys see day to day in your own lives? Jess, do you want to start?
Yes. I mean, I think we're really kind of fortunate and stuff. We're in an area where we've got the college kids, we've got the hospitals, that everything kind of rotates.
Sure.
So we're still seeing quite a big buzz of like people wanting to compete. We do a lesson package where everything's like the training, everything's included. So it then encourages people to take lessons because that's what's going to make them better. So it's a set price. So if they come for a lesson, you know, a couple times a week, or if they come for a lesson once a month, it's the same price.
Got it.
So we did it that way kind of because I think it then kind of took it out of it is like, look, this is a set price. Like we've kind of always been where people then can budget it. And then if it is out of the budget, they know ahead of time, it's not any kind of surprises.
Sure.
So we still see a lot of them taking lessons, and we're very fortunate that we have Tryon pretty close and it's, you know, reasonably affordable type thing that we end up, we have a lot of them going to Tryon.
So you have options. You give people options, I guess. So yes. Like opt in on what they can afford to do.
Yeah.
What about you, Ellie? I mean, I know you work with like people's horses, but you also give lessons. I know you're kind of scaling that back a little bit, but.
Yeah. Definitely over the last couple of years, there was like a big, drop in how, like, I would say frequency. And then also, a lot of them would stick to like one, like local show series. And try to compete in just those for like, cause you know, a lot of them have like a year end, like banquet and stuff that they didn't want to miss out on. But like, as opposed to doing multiple, as opposed to doing any USEF shows, any bigger shows, where the, you know, price tag to compete is, more expensive. And then I would say lessons have, scaled down a little bit. But again, around where I am, it's a lot of weather as well. Like with how cold it is, a lot of them don't take lessons in the winter anyway. Yeah, definitely had started to scale down just because board has gone up in our area.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, in terms of me as someone who's been a lifelong boarder, I do think that like the options for boarding is changing drastically. Like you used to have so many options. You could do the show barn. You could be in somebody's program that's like committed to, you know, to that kind of schedule. But then there always used to be like the laid back trainer as well, you know, like where you can go and take lessons, but you didn't have to commit to shows. That's gone, at least in my area.
I think it's gone kind of everywhere.
Yeah.
But now it's
barn.
It's show barn. Or you got to be lucky to find someone who like has a barn in their backyard and is willing to board.
Yeah. And I think that's even hard. You know, I think in this area, there aren't a lot of options for just even basic board or, you know, they have a long wait list and everything. So
yeah,
I think it's really hard to kind of figure it out. But lucky enough, there is quite a bit of land near us that there are still some barns that have it that, like where Courtney has the Van Diver horse, that's a beautiful facility. And that's amazing, you know, for her to get in there. But like past that, there's not a lot of barns in, I think, in a lot of areas that don't have it. So I think it's.
So what happened? What happened to those people? There's no money in it for them. It's too much work.
I think there's no money in it and it's too much work. Like what it cost us, like per horse. I mean, it would be more expensive than like a boarding facility. And that's just like our costs, like what's out of pocket. Like we run the numbers and like nobody realizes, like, I mean, we have to get the hay sent down from, you know, either Pennsylvania or Ohio or wherever else. But like, you know, the actual cost per horse is so expensive. So when we break it down, like we couldn't afford to even have a boarding as an option because we'd lose money. if we did board. So I think, you know, it's fortunate some of these places have been around, so they don't have a mortgage. They don't have, you know, they have a ton of grass. They have a ton of paddocks. You know, we're feeding hay 24 hours a day, basically, you know? So like it does cost us more for a lot of different reasons, but at the end of the day, that's just like what our facility can do. So I think, if you were like in this boat where you were having to buy a lot of hay and, you know, do all of that, you can't make the money. I mean, you can't lose money every month and still have a business.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I could tell you where I board now, it's small. It's like, there's no trainer. People come in and rent the arena, 'cause it's like a nice footed arena with a covered arena. But like the barn owner spends $10,000 per hay shipment from Ocala to come here.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. And that's just standard.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it is to get a semi load, and we use the big bales, you know, it's a lot. And so, you know, I think people are like, oh, you know, could you do boarding at a cheaper option? And I'm like, we just can't.
Not
like,
if you want your horse fed, you know?
Yeah. And it's not a charity, you know, like we can't lose money because of it.
So I actually, while you were talking, just opened my Excel spreadsheet that says how much it costs per horse.
You want to vomit, don't you?
Oh, no.
A little bit.
Exactly.
Like, without hay, without shavings, and granted, I did this a couple years ago now, so I'm sure it's not. I try not to update it because I don't want to know.
Because you will be sick.
But just for, like, you know, yearly vaccines, dental, call charge, you know, trims, which, you know, I only have two now that don't need shoes, worming. It's like $2,000 a year to just have a horse, like, and not feed it, just to, like, maintain it, like, health-wise.
Properly.
So then you look at shavings and hay, which this year it's now going to be even worse with the diesel prices. It's definitely not going to get any easier. But I feel like a lot of barns, too, are now pulling back, too, from, like, self-care. Like, a lot of the barns by me that offered self-care, just, hey, you know what, pay us, you know, $375 just for the dry stall. You buy your materials and, you know, you take care of everything that is to do with that horse. But a lot of them are going away from that because they still have to, you know, be in charge of the electric for the facility, for the
maintain the pastures. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I know. Doug's like, can we charge per board? Because this is getting ridiculous. Like, they'll break the boards. And we have electric on most of the fences on top of the boards, and they still seem to destroy them. Like, I'm like, no, honey, that's just horses. They're just destructive. Like,
I know. Because, right, like, people, where do you draw the line? Because I feel that way, too. Like, if my horse kept breaking the same thing, I always offer to pay. Like, okay, you know what I mean? Like, this is, my horse is the one destroying this. But, like, where do you draw the line? Because they're animals, you know? But
they're animals. And, like, at the same time, like, you know, I said, I'm like, we try not to nitpick and, like, itemize, like, everything. So I'm like, nope, it's just going to be part of it.
What, and you have to eat, yeah.
Yeah, you just eat it. I mean, and that's why I think a lot of them, you know, it was like a joke he said to me, but I think there are so many that feel that way, that like once it builds up, you're like, is this worth it, you know, just to board it, just to self-care, when you're, you know, eating it and eating that and this. And I think that's where it gets to be frustrating on just the level of self-care or board and everything else.
Well, and I'm not, you know, we're not going to go political here, but, you know, in this day and age, we're seeing, just if you look across the economy, we're just seeing an eroding middle class, and the middle class folks are who we're talking about. Those people who like want to be weekend warriors, are amateurs, love their horse, want to buy a decent horse to go in horse show, but horses are, for most of us who this isn't their full time business, they are a disposable income item. It's like a boat.
Right.
Sadly, that's what it is. And when times are like these and it's expensive, that's what we see disappear first. And that's exactly what we're talking about. Those self-care barns, those boarding barns that aren't tied to a program or a specific trainer, or maybe are more lax about, you know what I mean, about the program. Those are the first places that we see disappear. I remember that in 2008. I'm old enough to remember that, you know.
It's coming back around.
And it's scary. It's because then after that, you see a lot of horses being fire sailed. You know what I mean? To be mm-hmm. like, people can't afford this. I need it off my bill. I need it off my bill. And it kind of makes the hairs on the back of my neck stand up because you're starting to see that. Because that was my next question for both of you is like, how do you think this is affecting our market for horse sales? Because I feel like there's like, again, that there are really cheap horses you can get a good deal on, or they're highly, highly expensive. There's not a lot in that middle ground right now, unless you guys tell me if you think I'm wrong.
No, I think you can find them and they're still there, but I think overall it's not, you know, it's not the majority of them.
So aside from like inflation coming down and people feeling comfortable in what they're spending and what they're earning, like what needs to change in our sport to make it more approachable, more affordable, more like comfortable for people to be part of this? What do you think can change? Because there's so many factors that we can't change, right? You know?
Right. Yeah.
I mean, what? How can we make it affordable? Any ideas?
If you knew the answer,
it's
the million-dollar question, right?
It's the million-dollar question. I mean, and that's why, you know, you see everybody fighting about they have these ideas, and then you listen down, and I'm like, well, that's not going to fix it for XYZ. You know, like it's so easy to start to go down the rabbit hole if we just did this and this, but then in the end, you know, I don't think there's an easy answer, and that's what's the problem.
And I don't think any of those things are sustainable. So, no. Like, reading some of the flash in the pan articles, whatever, that have come out lately, like, you know, it's easy to look at, like, the horse shows that we have, you know, the five-star show jumping rounds in Paris, and feel like that's so unattainable or unapproachable, or the photos from that may, you know, cast the horse sport in this light that like, it's not for everybody, but like, that's always going to be part of the sport.
I don't think you're getting rid of it.
Exactly. I just don't, or like Vanity Fair doing like a photo shoot in Wellington, like Wellington is always going to be Wellington, guys. Like, I don't think that's fair. It's such a cheap shot. It's a cheap shot.
Yeah. Like, I think it's a cheap shot. And I think that the way we survive is, you know, budgeting, finding what works best for us, figuring it out, and just saying, okay, maybe I can't go to all the shows that I wanted to. Maybe I have to take a break. Maybe I don't do, you know, if you're on track to do a 5-star, maybe you have to skip one and do a 4-star, you know, if you're eventing, or maybe if you're at the lower levels and you're going, okay, I really wanted to do that A show. Maybe it's just staying home and doing a C show and really just kind of seeing what your goals are and seeing what works on the numbers. And really, I think at the end of the day, it's really budgeting it.
Yeah, I agree. And I also think it's making your voice heard to the folks who are in charge of our organizations.
Yeah.
So every year there are elections for people who sit on the board for USAF, USHAA, for USCA,
and for your local venues
and your local ones. Yes.
You should talk to those people who are more often than not volunteering their time or getting paid very little to keep our sports going. And you should make your voice heard if you think that the fees you are paying are too much. And there should be, that should be on those organizations to meet the community where they're at. And they're not going to change unless they hear from us. And that does not mean post on their Instagram post or comment on their Facebook or their TikTok. I mean, show up to a convention, send a letter, make your voice heard, fill out forms. Did you know the USCA has like an event form?
Every time you go to an event, and if you didn't like it, you can submit an event form.
Like literally an evaluation.
If you didn't like your judge, or you had a problem, you can write an evaluation.
and send it to the USDA. Yep. And they have to review that and take that feedback and log it. So if you are a member of any of these organizations and you are unhappy about it, I'm not going to lie. I did 1 year of USDF. I'm not renewing. It's crazy expensive for how little support I feel like I get. And I tried for like 10 months to try to get Mikey's like jockey club registration to them so I can do the all breed stuff. And they were horrendously, ridiculously difficult and wanted me to pay all these extra fees to like verify that he's a thoroughbred. And I'm like, yo, I have the jockey club papers. This is crazy. So you know what I mean? Like I'm not renewing. Sorry.
That's what I mean. You make your options. You pick the budget and say, look, not doing it.
Exactly. Right. But I feel like the people who are running these organizations should hear from us. If you feel like you spend too much, it's too expensive for you to do it. You should tell them that.
Yeah. And unfortunately, you know, a lot of people like myself included, went away too quietly and just kind of was like, oh, well, I guess it's just me that can't afford this. And so I think it's more comforting to hear, you know, I guess the positive side of the social media is like, okay, I'm not alone in this. Like, this is crazy expensive for everybody. I'm like, have I really? I mean, yes, I have too many horses, but I'm like, have I really crossed the line now? Like that it's just too expensive for me. But it's definitely hitting everyone. Like I was talking to my vet recently, cause I had owed them, you know, like $1,000 or so. And they, worked with this company called Cherry. I don't know if you guys have heard of it, but it's almost like it's a way better thing than Care Credit. Like you can get approved for, like I got approved for like 10 grand. And so I didn't do the whole 10 grand, but I was able to just basically send my vet $4,000 to like basically prepay for like everything I knew was going to happen this year. And that way they get paid on time. So I don't have to, you know, feel bad when they come out and I still owe them money. And then also like they're getting paid on time, but then also like I'm in a comfortable, like, pay $300 a month kind of, you know, payment plan. Because what they were saying is the issue is like, it's getting so hard to take care of horses and people don't want to like get rid of horses they've had forever that they're trying to cut costs on things they shouldn't, like, oh, well, this horse, I'll skip a dental. I'll wait till next year kind of thing. And then, you know, small things end up turning into big things. And they were like, look, so many clients wouldn't have us out because they felt bad that they owed us money, you know, and then things became bigger problems. And I said, well, you never had to worry about that with me.
You'll keep the tab going.
I was like, here, sorry about that, you know? And then I was trying to look this up while you guys were talking because we don't have it in PA. But I think it's more common in New England area, but like in Connecticut, we had to pay property taxes on horses.
I mean,
my mouth just dropped.
How?
Yep, 70% of their value. So if you paid board, basically you got taxed on that horse. Like the horse was, even though it was it's defined as livestock, but based on Connecticut laws, like you're taxed on the individual horse on their
how
that
do they deem
value.
The value of it? Bill of sale?
No, so I'm not sure really how they do that because I think it started after I moved out because I think there's like a certain cutoff. Like I think maybe if your horse is like under $4,000 or something, they won't tax you kind of thing. I'm not sure like how specific it gets into it, but I know that a couple of my the people that I know that own barns were having issues where like the barns were getting taxed for horses that they boarded even though they didn't own them. So they had to like go through the channels and say, look, like you have to tax this person, this isn't my horse, like, but like, you know, imagine doing that for horses that are worth, you know, 50-60 grand. You're gonna get this big tax bill for all these horses that you board that don't belong to you. But I mean, that's another thing, like, I mean, you know, they're being taxed like you would a boat, which is I think unfair. You know, you don't get taxed for a dog.
Geez, that's interesting. Wow.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. It's just, it's really hard right now. And I think that everybody is feeling that. And I think that, you know, the it's hard to definitely, like, especially when everything is going up, you know, like, I'm like, oh gosh, like, grain has gone up another, like 60 cents a bag. And, like, I'm sure it's going to go up more, you know, and it's like, I can't afford not to feed my horses. And, you know, the biggest thing with diesel Matt and I have been talking about is, like, it's going to, like, we're lucky we do our own hay. But it's still going to cost us almost double what we paid last year to make enough hay for our horses. You know, we don't sell any, we just make enough for our herd. And it's going to cost us so much more now because of how expensive diesel is. So it's just definitely a scary time.
It's hard
to have horses.
It's hard when they're, you don't really see any relief in sight. You know what I mean? Like, we're all just supposed to pay more with our wages staying the same for the, you know, for the time being. But are there any ways you guys are trying to save at this time? I mean, for me, I'm just not, I don't plan a show. You know, I just don't think I might do some local things here and there, but I don't think I'm really going to show this year.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I want to, I mean, one, my horses are out of shape. I mean, I walked a couple of them bareback so far one time this year, and I lunged them. So I've started the process of getting them in shape, but it didn't go far. But yeah, no, I'm in the same showboat. I was thinking about doing the Festival of the Horse in Saugerties this year, which is in, like, usually, like, late August, early September, which is, like, after all of the USEF shows. So it's definitely a lot cheaper at Saugerties, but I'm still, like, I don't know. I have to, like, make sure I have enough money for that. And once you hear my thorn, you will understand that my money is going to be going elsewhere. But yeah, I think that, and I'm trying to cut costs where I can in terms of, like, I mean, it's horrible, but, like, I'm doing it, like, based on myself. I'm like, do I really need to buy any new pairs of jeans, or, like, can I squeeze myself into these for another year?
Yeah, right. I'm with you out there.
How bad are the holes in this shirt? Do I really need a new one? Yeah, we've been cutting out on just, like, eating out. I think that's our big thing.
What about you, Jess?
Right now,
any?
Yeah, we've just been, you know, just trying to watch it and everything else, and just honestly, just trying to figure out, like, budgeting, like, what can we do, what can we not do. We've also, in the terms of, like, different horse shows, like, talked to the clients and been like, you know, what does everybody kind of want to do? Like, what does this look like? Where then basically we're utilizing that now. We're taking, you know, not just going, we're like, we'll take two horses. Like, we didn't go to Kentucky this year. We didn't show at Kentucky for the first time. And I mean, it's been, we skipped COVID year. And then we had 1 year in 2014 that we talked about that we had been going to Kentucky showing. And we chose that with just the one horse, it becomes so expensive that if we don't do that, we can go to Tryon. And we took, I think we had 16 horses there each weekend for the two, or each week for 2 weeks after Kentucky. So instead, like, that's where, you know, we can make money, where, like, coaching and prize money on the young horses and the big horses and all that. So we just have been kind of changing our schedule that it's not based on, like, all the five stars all the time. It's, like, based on, okay, what's going to be better for the business and the bank account.
Totally. I get it. So same applies to this conversation. If you guys have heard something that's, like, struck a nerve for you and you have some thoughts or some feedback or some ideas that you want to share, we always welcome all these discussions to keep going in our Facebook group. So please feel free to post.
Plan your 2026 competition schedule with one unmatched HITS experience across six premier venues, including HITS Ocala, HITS Del Mar, HITS Culpeper, HITS Chicago, HITS Hudson Valley, and HITS Vermont. Featuring seven total WCRH weeks, 10 total FEI jumping weeks, and the opportunities for horses and riders of all levels from coast to coast, this action-packed year will be one to remember. Learn more at www.hitsshows.com. So guys, it's that time of the whole episode, which I am dying to hear a couple of yours. Who's ready to kick off Rose and Thorn?
Sounds like Ellie's ready.
I feel like Ellie.
If you want the tea, I shall spill it. So, good news. I'll start with my Rose. My good news is Batman went up last week to finally have his THO surgery, which, you know, was the original surgery before we found out, you know, hey, your hyoid bone's infected. So before all of that, we were supposed to do this surgery. And so we finally did it. So he now has his tongue no longer connected to his hyoid bone on the left side. So he's not going to be causing those microfractures, and then will hopefully prevent him from getting swelling and neurological problems in the future. So he got that, and he's doing well. He's at home, and he's chewing well. So I'm super happy. And I'm hoping he will, like, be done with surgeries now. I think he's hit his quota. So if he could stop, that would be great. But poor guy. My thorn is that the poor horse can't catch a break, because while he was up there, they were like, oh, by the way, we did the sugar test and he has EMS. So he's metabolic. Which, honestly, I sent Justine pictures. Like, he's unfortunately a lean metabolic. Like, he's not fat. He just, you know, is now insulin resistant, which I know it's more common in quarter horses. And, you know, he's getting older. He's 19. So, yeah. So that's fun. So now I'm trying to figure out how to make a dry lot with how expensive everything is. So I have a couple landscape architects that are going to hopefully give us a quote to just turn my smallest paddock. I know I've been talking about doing it anyway, but now Batman's like, well, actually, now
it's time. Yeah.
Right. And we've talked about how, you know, I'm not willing to completely give up his like pasture turnout with his friends. And so we talked about, like, you know, muzzles and things with the vet. And then also, have you guys heard of the paddock paradise systems? The track systems?
That? I've heard of the track, the track systems. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's the same thing. And vet was talking about, a client that he has that has a lot of Icelandic ponies, that were all kind of metabolic and stuff. And she, he's had great success with them installing a track system, to, you know, just increase movement and things like that. And he said that that might be cheaper because they'll eat down the grass in the track pretty quick. And then hopefully it won't be as expensive as the dry lot. So I'm like, okay, so basically I've now have a lot of work to do to make more things for Batman.
Right.
But I mean, it's not a bad thing because honestly, he's one of the only horses in my barn that, like, if someone said, oh, this horse is metabolic, I would not, like, disagree with them. Like, you know, like, Nemo and Libby, I mean, they're fat. So I'm like, they don't get, like, I'm like, they need a track system and a dry lot anyway. So, like, that's fine with me. But it's just weird that I'm like, you've got to be kidding me that Batman, who's lean and looking good, is unfortunately the metabolic one. So yeah, and I've never had a metabolic horse before. I had a horse, we had a pony with Cushing's when I was growing up. But that was, God, like, you know, 20 years ago. So I don't, you know, things have changed so much. And so I'm trying to do a lot of research and talk to a lot of vets about different processes for the metabolic horses. He's 19 and I want him to enjoy his golden years, but obviously laminitis is not something I want to play around with. So I'm looking at what times, if he's got a muzzle on, what times of day will be best with the sugars and the grass, you know, and things like that. So it's turned into just basically a more complicated process for horse care, which, I mean, as if it could get more complicated. Right. So that's my my thorn. But my rose is that he's doing well, and I will take metabolic Batman. I'm just happy to have Batman, period. So
he's very lucky to have you, Ellie, who takes yes. such good care of him. Poor guy.
Poor guy.
But you should really like track how you build the track system, because I'm curious to learn more about this. I know this is sort of like a new age thing, so I'm super curious what you find out and what works for you.
Yeah, I bought the book by, I think his name's Jamie Jensen, the guy that actually kind of created the whole trend.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll let you know. I'm going to do some more research before I actually build it. But yeah, I'm definitely going to document it. And I was kind of curious too. I want to put like a step counter on like one of the horses, and then see like, you know, how much does it really increase? I feel like as a data person, you know, I feel like you understand this, Justine. I want to see the yeah. proof in the pudding.
Absolutely.
So
trust but verify. That's what we say.
Exactly. Exactly.
What about you, Jess? What's your rose and thorn?
So, my thorn was a bit different. So we got invited out to Vegas with some friends. And basically they are agents at State Farm, and they were like, look, we each get a plus one. Like basically like we'll pay flights, hotel, all this. So we're like, great. That's amazing. At first we thought it was during try-on, and I was like, I really can't get away, and found out it was like Monday through Thursday. And I was like, we can get away for a couple days. Like that'll be fun. So Doug and I haven't taken a vacation by ourselves, like type things. So we're like, my mom decided to come up and we were going to go. Everything could have gone wrong to get to Vegas. At one point we were like, do we just turn around and just not call it? Like something as bizarre as we got to the airport so early, Doug got to the front of TSA. It took us like an hour to get through. Raleigh doesn't usually have that bad, but it took like an hour plus to get through. We get to the lady and she's like, sorry, something's wrong with your information, like data what? Information.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah. So then we're like, okay. So I was through security at this point. He gets back out. They go. They can't figure out what's wrong. After they take all the time to figure it out, they're like, we'll rebook you for Tuesday at like 7 a.m. And I was like, no, like we'll figure it out. Like, so long story short, we left our house and we've been wearing these like stress rings and like sleep to like track it, to like try to make sure we're getting enough sleep and like, you know, just our health kick and everything else that we've been doing. And we had a pretty stressful trip to get there. It was a lot of other things went wrong. We ended up checking both of our rings. We didn't get to Vegas. We were supposed to be in Vegas at 9 a.m. We got to Vegas at 7 p.m.
What? Oh my God.
Oh, I mean, it would be the whole podcast to explain. We were talking to everybody and they're like, just let us know the next adventure, or the next episode of Doug and Jess, because it was literally like a series of events that we could have had an episode for each one of these.
Oh my
if God. We were like, I mean, I'm not kidding you. It was so crazy. But we laughed at the end of it because we were sitting with friends. We tracked our phones, the friends that we were gone with. Our stress level spiked at 4:30 in the morning when we were leaving the children trying to get out of the house. Not the rest of the stress of the day, like that went really bad. We apparently manage stress like in high intense situations, but we don't manage like getting out of the house very well.
Oh my God. Well, it's a lot when you got two little youngsters. That's a lot.
Well, and they were like wanting to talk to us and we're like, we really got to go. Like we got to go now. And like, apparently both of our like stress levels peaked then and not the rest of the day when like, I mean, Delta was amazing, but we got stranded in South Carolina. Like, I mean, it was craziness. But so that was definitely a learning, like, wow. At some point you just give up, but we didn't. And we were very thankful. It was a very relaxing, odd kind of Vegas. Like we didn't do like really any gambling. We, you know, just went to dinners and like, it was very nice. We were in bed quite early, which was very nice. So like it was a very relaxing trip, but it was definitely an interesting experience. So that was my thorn because yeah, I hope I never have to travel like that. And like Doug's like, I think we just quit traveling, like, you know, flying commercial and all this. I'm like, oh, this is going really well for us right now. So it was a lot. But then my rose is that, it's just been fun to like watch the young ones produce. Like that's always fun, but even younger has been watching the kids. Abigail is like trotting and cantering on the pony and like Hudson is like going around. So like, that's been my rose, is like watching them like really like fall in love with it. Like, we don't care if they ride or whatever else, but like Abigail's got the bug. She calls them trotting lessons. And we give her like a little course and then it's like super cute. Hudson wants to do like a walk dressage test. And then If it's anywhere like near the edge of the ring, cause we don't have a fence, the pony just takes over and like walks into the field and like leaves. We're like, that's it. Like, he has no control of the pony at this point.
Pony's like, bye.
Oh, and because he will go like adventuring and the pony doesn't eat grass or do anything bad. He's like, no, dressage sounds boring. We're just going to go for a hack, kid. And he like takes the kid. So it's been the cutest thing. Like, it's been... we close our barn, you know, in the afternoons and stuff. So it's been great. Like, in the afternoons has been our fun thing. Not in the last couple of days, because it's been 90 degrees. I told the kids I could not do it. But before the 90 degrees, it's been fun to come home in the afternoons and watch basically Hudson get taken over by the pony. And then Abigail's like so tough. She like kicks it. She's like, no doodle, and like kicks it and it listens to her. So it's really cute. So that's definitely been my rose last couple of weeks, is watching them like torment the pony, basically.
Oh, that's really cute. You need to you got to start documenting those things, because I feel like that.
Oh, we did. Doug was videoing because she's trotting over like all the poles. Like, she's been so cute, and like she's so tough. It's so cute. And then yes, we haven't been able to document Hudson getting like walked away with, because we're like, Hudson, pull. Two reins, pull. Like, we've taught him, like, you know, both hands, and the pony just like ignores him. And so then we inevitably like have to like run after him to go grab the pony and drag him back in the ring. And like, he never goes more than like a walk, but you're like, man, this is annoying. I gotta go get the pony. So we can't document it, because he'd be like, help me. And like, not what you want to like be videoing. Like, hold on, kid. We're just going to video you.
That's so funny.
But it has been cute. It's fun. So what's your rose and thorn?
Oh my goodness. So my rose is the story of this really cute little Connemara pony, Cash, who I've posted about in the Facebook group. But it's really the story behind it that's my rose. So as you guys know, I moved Mikey back to the area where I've always boarded horses, Odessa. It's a little bit farther away for me to drive. Like, it's about an hour commute. Leaving the city, essentially going to where the horses are, after I had like that brief period of time where I was able to keep them, you know, more locally. But it's nice to connect back with like my horse friends in this area. So now that I've been back in Odessa, what happened was, a friend of mine, a trainer friend who like I used to ride in her arena all the time when I was developing Wyatt for the Thoroughbred Makeover. So, you know, not that long ago, but just like a good friend who runs a really top notch hunter jumper program, has good kids, nice horses, just somebody will be a lifelong friend, just a good horse person friend, called me to be like, hey, I've got this friend who's got this Connemara, you should come sit on it. And I was like, okay. So I did. And, I had met her friend before. She's a Western rider, and her business is colt starting, essentially. Like, she takes 2 to 3 year old Western bred, mostly, horses and, you know, breaks them, gets them a good foundation, helps owners get started with them or to sell. That's her business. So this client came in with this horse that is a Connemara / quarter horse cross, and she started it for the client and got them showing in like some Western ranch classes, and then quickly realized it moved too good to be a Western horse. You know, like, it had the little Irish Connemara in it, that it's like, it's a real cute mover. And she actually ended up keeping the horse, like, ended up, I don't know how it worked out with the client, like whether she traded or whatever, but she ended up owning it and just was like, hey, I'm looking for somebody to put like English riding miles on it, like, started over fences. it's probably a dressage horse or an eventer. So she brought it to Joyce's, my friend, my hunter jumper friend, who then called me. So I rode it one time thinking like, oh, hopefully I help them. But then they called me back and were like, if it lives at Joyce's hunter jumper barn, will you just like sell it for her? And I was like, yeah, sure. So I've been doing that with them. But what's really cool about it is it's like me and Joyce and Leo, the owner, like we're three horsewomen who have skills in very different parts of horses, but we're all working together for the best outcome for this one young horse. Like it's 4 years old. It's, you know, extremely broke from like what Leo's done with it. Like it's so cool. I'm having the best time riding this horse, but it's just nice to be back in a horse community, like with horse people that I really admire and that care about all the right things. It's all about what can we do best for the horses with these people. And I've just missed that. I've missed that a lot. And so like, it really fills my heart with joy to be back and like, feel like someone called me to think that I had something to offer, you know? So
I love that.
That is my rose, is being backed with like horse people that build you up and want you to be a part of something and feel like you deserve to be a part of it. Like I'm having a blast. And, riding this young horse is really great. I'm just having a really good time. So it just makes it like re-solidifies that I made the right choice to come back here. You know what I mean? Like, despite all the drama and everything that happened, like, I'm just really happy to be back here. And Mikey's doing well, but also have like this network of horse people that I've known a long time that care about me, but also care about horses. So that is my rose. Is the community that
that's
I'm
exciting.
In. Yeah, it's all going good. So I think my thorn is that I'm going to like have to, you know, sell a kidney on the black market or something to keep the Connemara. Cause he's so darn cute. I love him. But no, in reality, I think the thorn is that it's just freaking hot. I know we keep talking about that this episode, but it just sucks. I can't believe it's only May and I'm having to deal with like summertime problems. I hate this time of year. It's not good for Mikey. It's just too hot. But knock on wood, all that said, Mikey is like hanging with it. He's doing fine. It's just, you know,
and he's sweating. I saw you post a picture and he's sweating good.
He is sweating good, which is great. It's just, we got a long slog before it gets real bad. You know what I mean? But, but it just means like the way I ride and train with him is less this time of year. So it's nice to have something else to ride, like the Connemara and other things, you know? So, but yeah, summer sucks. That's my thorn.
Yep. I concur. I support that.
All right. So we do have a question from Healy, who posted this in our Facebook group, which I have zero answers for Healy. So I'm hoping, Justin and Ellie, you guys maybe have some suggestions. Healy was asking about, like, how do you guys organize your feed schedules as someone who, you know, has horses coming and going, multiple horses to manage with different needs. Do you use an app or are you like an old school whiteboard person in the feed room? Or how do you organize your routine for your staff? Or even if you have farm sitters, like what's your routine? Jess, you want to start with you?
Yeah, I'll start. So we do everything old school. The only thing I'd say that we do like kind of technology wise is a calendar, and the calendar's for like lessons, days off, schedules for the horses. Like if the farrier's coming, everybody's linked to it so they can see it. But it's mainly like just for us to be like, okay, Lily's gone this week. Everybody else is here. This one's off. So it's like more for just scheduling. That is the only thing we use. And then that way we also have lessons in there and they can see it. That's the only thing we use. And it's not really an app. It's just a calendar. And then we ask for like the barn day to day. The feed chart is all on a whiteboard and it's updated all the time and it's got reminders. It's got lates. Like it is an old school whiteboard that we drew the lines and we wrote the horses' names and everything. And then we have a lot of whiteboards. We love our whiteboards. And then that's in the feed room. And then for like we have a couple whiteboards out by like where we tack up and where you'd walk out to the arenas. So that's got the, we do text a daily schedule, like the day before, who's riding, what time we're starting. All of that is to just a group chat, like just a group chat basically on WhatsApp. And so then we'll do that. And it just basically, that's where we'll like send updates or whatever. But on a day to day, like there's the turnout, you know, drawn out boards. It's got who's on day turnout, who's night turnout. If we need any reminders, you know, sometimes it's got kid drawings on it. Sometimes it's got, you know, who needs to be what we do when we're leaving. Like it is a massive whiteboard and it's got, you know, it's got emergency numbers that aren't ours. It's got the list of horses that are here. It's got the daily. And so that daily list that comes off the text goes back on that whiteboard every day, like who's riding what, and you can wipe it off when you're done, which I love when you have a long list of horses, you can just like wipe off every time. So you don't keep looking at, you know, the long list of horses in the middle of the heat. You get to see you only have one left, you know, like that thing. And yeah, it kind of, it's like daily reminders, weekly reminders, monthly reminders, who's going to what horse show. And then like, if they're getting therapies and stuff like that, that's a whole nother whiteboard. So, and then I personally have a calendar that is a like old school calendar, spiral calendar that I use.
Gotcha. Okay.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Cause I do all the billing and everything else. So that goes on there. So yeah.
What about you, Ellie? How do you keep track of everything?
So I'm old school as well. But, so with Matt, I try to make it easy for him.
Right. Fair enough.
Because
husband proof it. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause his horse, you know, gets a handful of grain and I put him on Colicare this year. And he gets like seasonal allergy medications and things like that. So I literally have a table and a Word document and I print it out. And it has, you know, what horses get, AM and PM, how much, any kind of supplements, anything like that for like the routine stuff. And that is literally in like a plastic sleeve on a clipboard in my grain room. And I have like the date that it was updated. So that's kind of really old school because I don't even have a printer. So I make Matt go print it somewhere. So there's that. But then I have a whiteboard out in the barn that I'll put down, like if a horse, for example, is on SMZs for, you know, a certain number of days, I'll put, you know, any extra medications that aren't usual on that whiteboard. And I have a little note, you know, at the bottom of my printed sheet that says check whiteboard for additional medications, just in case. And then we have a whiteboard on our a calendar whiteboard on our refrigerator in the house, and that's where I put like horses come or horse vet, you know, what time, you know, horse chiropractor this time, worm the horses this time. And I just like I put stars for, you know, the dogs preventatives and things. I have it all together since, you know, I live on the property, so everything's in there. I like having it actually printed and protected in a little plastic sheet in the grain room. And that's easy too, because then I have the document that has like all the like specific types of food. Cause I know that sometimes Matt's like, well, wait a second. Like you want this kind of grain or that kind of grain. And I'm like, no. Like the brown one, this one.
Oh my God. But it's so typical. You want to just make it easy and then, you know, it helps it all out.
For sure.
Yeah. I've never heard of any apps.
There are a ton of apps.
I think there's there are like, a lot. Yeah.
There's a lot of different like manager apps, like feed apps, and like you can upload all your Coggins app. Like, I mean, there's a lot of different horse management apps out there that would honestly overwhelm me, to be honest.
I was gonna say maybe
file cabinet. I'm like, I have a file cabinet.
Same. Like I have a folder that just lives in the truck that I think has Coggins from horses that died 10 years ago that I should throw out.
Well, we have to update. The girls make me update ours, but like I did the other day go through like the stack of like old ones and I was like, that one's It didn't die, but I was like, that one's like not here. That one's gone. That one's gone. Like, I was like, I can throw these away because they're not even, they've been sold. They've moved on. They're not boarded with us, like all of the above. And I was like, so I did go through a bunch of them, but we do have, like for the horse shows, I will go through and have a vaccine letter, a health cert, and a paper Coggins for the horses going to the horse shows. So they're in the trucks that, because sometimes there are different horses in the truck. So then I just keep like a big folder, and that's where I found the random ones. But yeah, I mean, like, I'm way old school because honestly, like, I don't even know where my phone is sometimes. Like, how am I going to remember what app it is? Like, I just, there's too many apps on my phone to start with, to be honest.
Well, and I just think I get so like afraid. Like, what if the app doesn't load or something,
or
if it doesn't work?
Something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or what if like I just don't use the app?
I'm like, I don't trust it. And I'm a hoarder too. So like, I have health certs from 2022. Yeah. It's like, I don't need this anymore. This is irrelevant. But I'm like, but it shows he was healthy then. Yeah. So I'm like, yeah, so maybe this will come in handy.
My app would have like 45 horses in it. That would be my problem too. Is like, I would have 45 horses on the feed chart. And so, you know, Matt would come to feed and he'd be like, there are only 6 horses here. Which 6 are these?
But maybe we should try the apps to give like listeners an idea of like, is it worth it? Maybe that's something we should talk about. Yeah. We each try one app.
Oh yeah.
You know, I would love to hear from the listeners. Do they even want to know, do the apps work, or everybody's pretty good old school? Like, are we all okay with paper calendars still?
I am. Yeah. I put a paper calendar in the feed room. Yeah, I'm with you.
Oh no. I mean, like, I have a paper planner that like I write in all the time and it goes everywhere with me.
Yeah.
I have like the Erin Cauldron or whatever. It's amazing. I order one every year.
Oh no, yeah. I'm with you. I'm the same. So, but we're not cool. We're not with it, guys.
We're not with it.
I guess not. I mean,
maybe we should.
I mean, it's because I'm going to be 30. So, I mean, I think it's.
Shut up, Ellie.
Every time she does it, it kills me.
I know. I'm like, Every time.
Ellie's like, yeah, I'm getting old, guys. I'm like, yeah, she's so old. She's 15 years younger.
She's a baby. Just a baby.
But app related, I was looking, and I guess there is a like a laminitis monitoring app for like what time of day to like, it's like $5.99, and I was like, I can spare $5.99, so I was gonna get that just in general to kind of see what it's about. But
I could chat GPT and Google it.
I mean, probably, but I'm very
I'd be like, I'm not spending $5.99.
I'm anti chat GPT. I refuse to use AI for anything. Like, when my mom, I asked my mom a question sometimes when we're on the phone, and she's like, well, the AI says, and I was like, I don't trust AI. Find the actual source. Like, I'm one of those people.
It tells you that. If you Google it and it's AI, it tells you the source.
Yeah.
It's supposed
to. So I'm like, pull it up.
Yeah. It is.
I want the proof. I want the proof.
Yeah. It tells you the proof. Google does. Google AI tells you the proof. So.
Well, if you have a question for us and you want us to answer it on the air on one of our podcast episodes, you can always send us an email at justine@heelsdownmedia.com, or you can post in our Facebook group, which is the Heels Down Happy Hour Podcast Lounge. It's free to join, and we have really great discussions there all the time. And if you want to hear more from us, check us out at heelsdownmag.com for the latest news. And you can always follow us on social media at heelsdownhappyhour on Instagram and at heelsdownmag on Facebook and TikTok. And if you love our show, please give us a rate and review wherever you listen to podcasts, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else. And we want to say thank you to all of our sponsors this month, Farnham, Hits Horse Shows, and Eagle Gold. All right, guys, that's a wrap. Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers.